Welcome to Galcom's Mission Compass podcast. To learn more about Galcom and our guests today, visit galcom.org.
The whole love of Christ builds that bridge between tribes. And it's that element of really, truly loving in a manner in which Jesus calls us to love that builds that bridge.
Hello, friend. We're glad you're here today to join us on Galcom's Mission Compass, your guide to the Great Commission. I'm Ron Harris. What does it take to be a missionary today? Well, it may take someone just like you, with the unique skills and abilities God gave you to do your part in the Great Commission. And here's your host, Galcom's Tim Whitehead, to tell you more.
Thank you, Ron, and thank you, friend, for joining us. Yes, what does it take to be a missionary today? Well, I've got an answer for you. We're going to hear from Rick Bradford, who is a career missionary over in Egby, Nigeria. He and his wife, Martha, are home on furlough. And whenever Rick's around, I always get him up into our studio here at the Galcom office because he always has such great, encouraging stories of what God is doing over in Nigeria. God is moving, friends. We sometimes get discouraged. Would anybody believe me if I told them about Jesus? Yes. Why? Because the power of the Holy Spirit, when the good news of the gospel comes to somebody, it's life transforming. So Rick is going to join us and share some stories of what he's doing in Nigeria. But you might say, well, Tim, wait a minute. I'm not going to Africa as a missionary. Well, every month, Stan Jeter, our good friend from GNA News, the Global News Alliance, GNA.news, joins us with a story from their ministry from around the world, but also some tips and tricks. So what does it take to be a missionary today? How can you be a missionary? Take out your cell phone, except if you're driving. Otherwise, take out your cell phone, go to your browser and go to GNA.news right now. What they've got on the website is all these tips and tricks on how to use your cell phone as a missionary tool, how to tell God's story. Is your church doing something special? Maybe you volunteer at a charity, at a ministry somewhere. Maybe you know a missionary that's come back home from somewhere and they've done something miraculous and nobody knows about it. Being a missionary is being a witness, telling others about what Jesus Christ has done in your life. That's a witness. And in somebody else's. And that's what GNA News is all about. Mainstream media is not carrying these stories about God transforming lives, about God performing miracles in people's hearts and minds and families and communities. But we can. That's our job as believers, as part of the Great Commission. So if you don't have your cell phone out yet, I'm going to say it again. Take out your cell phone, GNA.news, and there's all sorts of information there on how you can then use your cell phone to be part of God's story. You want to click up at the top here, training. It says Home About Us Training. You click the training button there. Smartphone reporting. That's what it is. Stan's been joining us every month, shares a story, and then he tells us how do we tell a good story, a captivating story, practically, kind of the news side of it. Just wondering, who's the Stan Jeter you keep talking about? Stan has been doing this for 50 years, grew up in Cuba as an MK, then he joined CBN, the folks down in the States that do the 700 Club. He was part of CBN News. When he retired from there, he started the Global News Alliance to help people that don't have the $1 million in cameras and all of the editing equipment so they can tell the story. There's no one better to learn from. So all these great little things, how to hold your phone the right way, how to get different shots, and how to tell a really good story what God is doing. Friends, that's what it takes to be a missionary today. Using the tools in your hand to tell God's story. So Stan's going to do that. Rick Bradford's going to tell us what's going on in Nigeria. I got to get Rick trained maybe on this cell phone thing here and be able to send some videos over so we can see what he's doing. And of course, every week, Bonnie Sala from Guidelines International joins us with a short devotional called Reset. And she's going to join us in about 2 seconds. But I want to encourage you, go to guidelines.org because they have an assessment tool. You may be saying, I can't be a missionary. I don't speak in front of groups. There's lots of different ways to be a missionary. Just like in 1 Corinthians, Paul says there's different parts of the body, but we're all part of the body. And I can't say to the hand, I don't need you. Maybe you're a hand, maybe you're an eye. Use the assessment tool at guidelines.org to find out where you fit in the Great Commission. What are your interests and giftings and abilities do and say so that you can participate. Ron, you said, I got the answers for how people can get involved in the Great Commission. Here's the tools. Guidelines.org, GNA.news, and then listen to Rick's testimony, be encouraged. So right now, over to Bonnie. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's easy to question God when those who are supposed to represent him fail. I'm Bonnie Sala with Reset. Kendra was 15 when she suffered a head injury while playing a game at a church event. The way she remembers it, church leaders didn't take her injury seriously, and lack of emergency medical care has caused her lifelong repercussions. When Joseph told his youth pastor that his father was hitting him, he was told to show more respect for the role of father despite the violence. Both had no use for church after that. Perhaps you've been hurt by religious organizations or people. Many of us can relate to having our faith impacted by leaders for better or worse. In the aftermath of such disappointments, we may reevaluate our faith while rightly questioning the transparency and integrity of leaders. Your questions are the perfect starting place for conversations with Jesus. He welcomes all with open arms, whether we come hurt, confused, weary, or angry. Finding God in these moments brings us back to simple relationship with God. Our faith should never rest on the words of a human leader. In the wake of disappointments, we're reminded to place our hope entirely in Jesus, not in the way that people represent him. If you find yourself questioning God because people have let you down, this passage from the Bible book of Romans is for you. Just because they were unfaithful, does that mean God will be unfaithful? Of course not. Even if everyone else is a liar, God is true. Let God meet you in this time as he reveals his truth. Cling to God even as he exposes those who fail to represent him. I'm Bonnie Sala with Reset. To read, share, or hear this again, or to find more resources like this, visit guidelines.org.
Well, friend, every month, founder-director of the Global News Alliance, Stan Jeter, visits us to share what God is doing around the world, stuff you're not hearing in the mainstream media, and to encourage us to get involved. Stan, always great to have you on the program.
Tim, it's a pleasure, and I'm excited to be sharing stories that make a difference and stories you don't hear on the regular news, plus a few tips on how to do stories yourself.
Exactly. We all want to be part of the Great Commission, and part of it is telling God's story. So, first of all, what news do you have for us today? Good news, bad news, hard news?
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult, but in the end, it's encouraging. This is a story from the Middle East, and everyone knows about the war that's going on there. We have today an interview with one of the workers in southern Israel who was taken hostage by Hamas and then released after some weeks of captivity. And he tells a story. So I thought that would be a good one to get started with. The Hamas terrorists on October 7th invaded Israel and they murdered over 1,000 people. And one of them was the employer of a man named Jimmy Pacheco. He's from the Philippines. He was a caretaker. And Pacheco then was taken captive. He spent more than 50 days as a prisoner in Hamas tunnels in Gaza. And today he thanks God for his freedom, but he still recalls the horror of his capture. And here's an interview with him.
When I was taken out of the house, I didn't expect them to spare me because I witnessed my employer being killed mercilessly.
Jimmy lived in a kibbutz where he was a caregiver to an elderly man who was immediately killed by Hamas. In an exclusive interview, Jimmy talked about his harrowing experience.
I heard gunfire from another house and I sent a message to my wife back in the Philippines to take care of our children. Hamas asked me if I am a soldier. They set a rifle on automatic and fired beside my ear until the ammo ran out. After that, I heard a buzzing sound in my ears. When our supplies were scarce, they only gave us one pita bread for the whole day. But I didn't eat it in one sitting. I just got a pinch whenever I felt hungry. As time passed, the water supply became salty. I worried because I had a history of kidney illness. When I needed to defecate, they gave me a piece of toilet paper. I didn't use it. I hid it in my pocket so I could eat it. For me, it was food. I would take the toilet paper and dab it on the moist walls. We were about 40 meters below the ground, so it was cold and there was condensation on the walls. When the paper got wet enough, I ate it. It filled my empty stomach as well as quenched my thirst. They also made me clean 7 toilets. I was okay with that because if I did not do it, the smell would get worse. During the first and second weeks, I stayed inside a small prison with a toilet right beside me. I kept thinking and wondering, why would they capture me? It was driving me crazy. Why would they capture me if I didn't do anything to them? I got my strength for my children. I had the strength to eat toilet paper because I needed to survive for my children. I pleaded to God because I was 12 years old when my father died. I prayed, please don't do this to me. Please let me live. Even if I stay here for 10 years, just let me live.
After roughly a month and a half in captivity, Jimmy was included in the first batch of hostages released by Hamas.
They told us we would be leaving the tunnel where we were held captive. That's when I started to cry. When I first saw the sun and came out from the tunnel, I just knelt down and thanked the Lord because I saw the sun again and breathed fresh air. My strength came from the Lord and for my children. Now I am more mature and stronger in many respects. I want to stay here and keep working, even after what they did to me. I want to provide for my family because I do not want my children to experience the hardships that I experienced when I was a child. And I would like to thank you all for your prayers.
It's quite a stirring story.
Wow.
Came to us courtesy of CBN News. And I'm sure there are a lot of stories like this, but it's amazing to get our hands on one and to listen to a direct account of the experience there. The tips I'd like to share about telling stories yourself, and we can find it here in this story. You need to include specifics in a story, specific details. And so if you look at this story, the five W's of journalism, who, what, when, where, why, or maybe even how. Who? Jimmy Pacheco. What? He's taken hostage by Hamas, and it's a story of his survival. When? October 7th and days following. Where? Southern Israel. Why and how? Well, we don't know the why exactly, but how? He relates how he was captured and survived. So when you tell a story, pull out your smartphone, go to a place or check into a story that relates to your church or to Christians or whatever. Those are the stories we want to tell because nobody else tells those stories. And then think of the specifics. Make sure you include all of these details, who, what, when, why, and where. And that anchors your story in reality. It gives it credibility, and it gives the information people need to process.
Stan, I appreciate the stories. And, you know, we sometimes kind of tritely say, you know, don't worry, God will take care of you, or pray, prayer helps. It's true. We just heard a real testimony of probably one of the worst situations anyone could ever be in.
Yes.
And he thanks people for praying for him. And he talks about God carrying him through. This is what the stories want to tell about the power of God and why we want you to tell them too. Stan, you said this came from CBN News. I know for years you were there at CBN. So friends, tips and tricks from a milestone award winner from the NRB, career journalist Stan Jeter. You can't get much better. This is like masterclass. Go to gna.news for all of the other instructions on how you can be part of telling God's story. Stan, thank you, even for this tough story. Thank you for sharing with us every month here on Mission Compass.
Thank you, Tim. Bless you, man.
You may be listening to us on your computer, but you can also find us on your smartphone using Spotify, iTunes, or other streaming platforms. Just go to galcom.org and choose your favorite. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and share our podcast.
Well, friend, it's always a great pleasure when Rick and Martha Bradford from my home church here in Hamilton, Ontario, come back for a short furlough from Nigeria. I always quick grab Rick and say, come on into the studio. Let's talk about what God is doing in the Egbe region in Nigeria. Rick, great to have you back in the studio.
Thank you, Tim. Oh, man, turn the heat up, Tim. What's going on here?
So what was the temperature when you left Egbe?
It was 38 degrees.
Sorry. I'll go find a thermostat here, but I don't think we can put it up to 38 here in the studio.
Actually, kidding and all, because you know what? Christmas here has been very pleasant. It's been mild and somewhat for our records, right? We appreciate that. Some said I brought it from Nigeria, but no, it's not true. God does what God does. So it's been good to be back. Certainly has. It's been good to be back. Christmas, I think it's first time in almost 8 years to be back at Christmas time, just to enjoy the time with family. Children, grandchildren, and all around the big table, right? You know, it's really good.
Yeah, I got one of your granddaughters in my Awana Club, my Sparks Club at the church, and she just started telling me, I think in October, Grandma and Grandpa are coming home for Christmas. So, but that's the life of a missionary. And as we talk about here on the Mission Compass, trying to let people know what's available to participate, how to be a missionary, what's available, this is part of the real life. You know, it's kind of sacrificing these things. So how good was it then to be home for Christmas with family?
You know, we do around the table. So what's the best thing of the year? And my answer was, it's happening right now.
Yeah.
It's happening right now, being with family. Everybody was there and we're sitting around the table and just enjoying a wonderful meal together. And the level of ages, you know, it's been a few years now and everyone's sort of a little bit older and they're just soaking it in and the conversations are just going back and forth. And it was just exciting to be there and everybody sharing together and just having that time.
There's a great line in Chariots of Fire when Eric Little has not raced in the 100 meter and his coach says, hey, any regrets? And he says, sure, regrets, but no doubts, though. He knew he was doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Feel the yes. same way? You know, maybe some regrets, but no doubts. God has called you to Nigeria. That's where you're supposed to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I challenged my family. We want you home. We want everybody knows that, you know, hey, it's good to be wanted, right? But there are no doubts. No, absolutely no doubts that God has called us here and God has called us to be a part of this work that's in this part of Nigeria. The Middle Belt is what it's called today. Back in the day, it was still northern, but it's still somewhat in the middle. And there's been a lot happening in the middle, as we've been saying before. There's a lot of movement of people groups, tribes are moving back and forth. And we don't gather or really understand this tribal issue, this tension that happens between tribes. But it's true. It's real. And you really get a sense of it when you're being there. But you know, the whole love of Christ builds that bridge between tribes. And it's that element of really, truly loving in a manner in which Jesus calls us to love that builds that bridge. So we're able to do that. And that's what's exciting about this, is that even though there's a mass movement of people of the north coming to the middle, and unfortunately, a lot of Islamic people, it's a movement of Islamic people moving to the south, as we mentioned way back before, that there's a political movement happening here in Nigeria. And you see it, that Islam wants to touch the ocean. And so this is what they're doing.
But doesn't this make it easier as a missionary? Because it's, I know with Nigeria, it is actually dangerous to go farther north. You got Boko Haram, you got issues there. But if smaller pockets of them are coming towards where you are, isn't it safer, better, easier to reach out to some of these? I know a lot of Fulani, you do a lot of reach in these kind of Fulani camps, going out, building schools. We've talked about the schools and the wells and all the other good you're doing and then bringing the gospel. So isn't it easier for you?
Well, you mentioned something about smaller groups. It's actually large movements. So it's not so much easier. When I talk about large movements, I talk about 1,000, 2,000 at a time.
These aren't small clans and villages like when we first started talking about this, when you first got there, you're finding a little group of grass huts, you know, 100 people or something. These are massive groups. So this is a little different than what we talked about before.
So just before I came back, I went into an area that I hadn't been for a year. And it was 6 kilometers into the bush. And as we got into there, we were placing a new missionary, and we'll talk about these missionaries.
Yes, please.
Placing a new missionary into a site that we just had heard had grown. Well, in 1 year, over 500 huts had been built in this remote area where there was only a half a dozen huts. Within a year, a whole group of people. So 500 huts is how many? One wife with 3-4 children. You know, you're looking at 2,000 people, 3,000 people just plopped in 1 year in a portion of the bush. They cleared the land, they're farming and doing whatever. So when I say massive, this is how large these groups are happening, just showing up within a year.
Okay, so in the past, you've gone into these communities and kind of said, what is your need? A lot of them say schooling. So you've built some schools. Was there a school in this community now that is overrun, or is this like...
Okay, you brought an itch.
Sorry. Scratch it.
Yes. No, I shook hands with the leader of this particular group when we brought this new missionary in. And shaking hands, he wanted me to help them get a school to this community. They haven't got one yet. Okay. I gave him a challenge. I said, listen, if you start, you get a hut, you get to build this area, have some kids, you have a teacher here of your own, start something. If we see you are serious, may God allow us to come and do a school. Okay. We've yet to accomplish that task.
So then jumping around a bit, but how many schools have you either built or are subsidizing teachers for?
So we had a school a number of years ago before COVID.
Yeah.
When COVID came, we had to close it. So that was one building, two-room schoolhouse in a Fulani camp, which is quite rare, but that's what we were able to do. Then during COVID, the tail end of COVID, we were able to move to another area and build a school there. And we were able to work with at least 8 Fulani camps, plus Hausa speaking camps, and a whole village of these northern people with the Yoruba. So in doing that, that school now has grown. We just accomplished a 6 classroom block. We just finished building. We were able to get enough funding to build the building. So we have 11 classrooms in this plot of land. 3.8 hectares of land the village gave us. We built this block wall to protect the kids. We're now working on a playground for this particular school. So that's our second, but the largest one. It's our central school. We just opened up a third one 2 months ago. And that was in another Fulani camp, another bush camp. 200 huts just got plopped in there 2 years ago. They said, we want a school. So we said, okay, here you go. Build a small grass structure where water doesn't hit the head of the student. So the way I explained it. So water doesn't hit your head and sun doesn't beat on your head. So the children can sit down and learn how to read and write. So they agreed. As soon as we went back into the village, the men got up and started cutting trees right away. And so immediately they were serious. By the time we got back from our visit from hut to hut to see how people were, they had already collected sticks. So it was 2 weeks later, they'd put these sticks in the ground and put a structure. It was another week, now because it was harvest, it said, give us some time. They actually had grass and plastic on the top. So we are now teaching 74 children in this grass school.
And all Christian teachers?
All Christian teachers.
This is wonderful.
And so we have now 11, 12 Christian teachers that we're doing. So we have 3 schools. Right now, I have a 4th. They're begging. So we're waiting still. As God leads and as the funding comes in to support a teacher, we'll be able to do that.
Jumping back to a comment you made earlier about missionary. When you were here last summer, July, we spoke about how because of the work that you started, and because now SIM, sorry, we didn't even mention this. You're an SIM missionary in Nigeria. We're talking like old friends here. So everybody else just jump in, come in the middle of a conversation that's been going on for years. That SIM has now been sending nationals, Nigerian evangelists, to come and work alongside you. And we are so thrilled that you had had 2 or 3 sent to you and a promise of more. And so tell us what's happened then since that conversation this summer about the number of workers doing evangelism in this area.
This has been a dream come true. You know, God allows us to have dreams, and he allows some of them to come true. Well, let me just correct one thing. It wasn't SIM missionaries. It's EMS. EMS is a branch of ECWA. ECWA is the church that was developed out of the SIM missionary work since 1901.
Okay. So I was close.
You were close. You were close. Never correct your boss. No. But yeah, EMS. EMS is Evangelical Mission Society. They have 4,000 missionaries serving around the world. Around the world.
Okay.
Chicago. Now in Oakville.
Okay.
We have a missionary in Oakville.
EMS, from Nigeria.
From Nigeria, awesome. In Oakville. So they've started a new church in Canada, the ECWA Church. It's really exciting what they're doing there. But let's go back to the Middle Belt. The EMS have really focused on the North and the North missionaries. So we have been seeing all of this Northern people coming to our region, the Middle Belt. And there was a huge need for missionaries to come and be a part of developing these new communities. But there was Yoruba language, and these were Hausa-speaking, Fulani-speaking people, and other tribal languages. And so the Yoruba didn't know the language, so how could they reach them? So there's this huge dilemma, and people were afraid to go to the bush. So EMS, after a lot of discussions, a number of years, sent 3 missionaries to come work with me.
That could speak the language of the people that have moved
down. That could speak the language of the people of the North. So with that, I was able to support these missionaries for their first year in their salaries and benefits just to get them established. Well, that's carried on a little bit longer, but unfortunately, but it's what God is doing. Those 3 missionaries were able to do the work in starting new churches. When the director of EMS, the international director, came over and he came to our area. I had a conversation with him. He said he'd come back in a few days. We'd have a longer conversation. That happened. What we were able to do, he said, I cannot believe what's happening. Let me come back in 3 months. we will do what they call a saturation campaign. We'll saturate the area, see the need, and then come and evangelize and do all these things, and then what God will do with that. They came back 3 months later. I happen to be in Canada, so I know God says, Rick, we're going to pull you out of this one for now. It's about God, not about Rick.
Amen.
And so with that happening, they were able to catch the vision of the need, promise that they would send 50 new missionaries.
50?
50 new missionaries to the southwest of Nigeria.
Well, friend, we are at the end of the program today. We'll continue this conversation next week on Mission Compass, your guide to the Great Commission. There are many ways to partner with us. To find out more, visit our website at galcom.org. That's Galcom, spelled GALCOM.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. I'm Ron Harris. Thanks for joining us today on Mission Compass, a radio ministry of Galcom International.